I'm Demay Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to Pink Martini from their 20th anniversary CD of Sympathique to be released on June 29th, and you can find out more about that at pinkmartini.com. Today, we feature Elina Lim, creator of Invisible Spectrum Stories. It's a storytelling show with storytellers of color. We'll hear about their upcoming event on June 18th, that's Monday, at 8 p.m. at the Secret Society in Portland. And later in the show, I'm going to play a 2006 story about the Angel Island Immigration Station in San Francisco. It's from my Peabody Award-winning series, Crossing East, and Angel Island was a detention center mostly for Asian immigrants who faced unfair exclusionary laws. We'll hear how Angel Island mirrors the current tragic detention of people seeking refuge in America today. Stay with us. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Demay Roberts. With me live in the KWU studio is storyteller Elina Lim. Hey, welcome.
Hi.
And she is the creator and founder of Invisible Spectrum Stories. And I want to welcome you to Stage and Studio and also Invisible Spectrum Stories. Elina, would you tell us how about your journey as a storyteller of color? When did you find out you love telling stories before an audience?
So I actually grew up and spent most of my life in Singapore, I only moved to America about 4 years ago. So while I was in Singapore, I think it was about like 7 or 8 years ago, I started to listen to actually The Moth, the podcast. They weren't actually running any physical shows in my country, but I was listening to podcasts like very intensely, and I absolutely loved it. And I was just thinking like, oh, I wish something like this was here in Singapore too. And then it clicked in my head, well, why not? Why can't there be? And so I decided to start Story Slam Singapore, which is still Singapore's largest and longest running storytelling event
still
in the country.
Wow, good for you. So did you is that where Invisible Spectrums basically started then, or?
No, not exactly. So when I moved over to Portland directly from Singapore 4 years ago, I was actually really excited to not do any organizing. I was like, oh, it's great. I'm done. I can like just, there's so many storytelling events here. I can just tell stories, right, and I can listen to stories, and I don't have to do any
producing.
Exactly.
Right.
And I was really jazzed about that for a while. But then it was two years ago. There was this period in like that all of us noticed on social media where there were so many like basically videos of that people were recording and put and uploading of basically black folks being killed by police officers.
Right.
It was just one after the other, and it was building this like obvious like re-traumatizing so many of my friends, and I was just it was so upsetting, and I wanted to keep telling stories and listen to more stories. And every event that I go to, suddenly it was so obvious to me, and I don't know why it wasn't screaming out to me before, but then it was so obvious that like I don't want to hear these stories, I want to hear other people's stories. But at events, I would go and I would be the only person of color who was telling a story, or maybe one of two, or none at all. And then I realized that this was a problem. And I also started to question, is it because like people of color just don't want to tell their stories?
And this was here in Portland.
Yeah, exactly.
At events like The Moth.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I was like, is this the reason? Or is it because we feel silenced? Is it because we don't feel like there's a space that we can tell, like what's going on? So I figured I would just like test this theory and start an event and see who would show up, and people definitely showed up.
Well, and we're hoping that maybe The Moth will be changing now that there's new leadership too.
Exactly.
That's POC, right?
Yeah.
Want to talk a little bit about that?
So Cookie is
what's her full name? Oh, I don't know either. So anyway, but the new leader The Moth.
I've always
in Portland.
Yes. Yeah. So Cookie is one of the new producers of The Moth here in Portland, and they run a show that is the Holocene show. So I think the last time that I went, what was that theme? I think it was I think the theme was about falling, which is such a fantastic theme. And they were producing that show. And I know that they, like, the moth getting them as a producer was because that they were very much trying and intently believing that they could try to put more people of color in, like, in positions like the producer, so that there could be, like, more diversity in maybe the audience and the storytellers.
Right. Well, that's good. I think that's a really good step in the right direction. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts with my guest, Alina Lim, and she's the founder of Invisible Spectrum Stories, which launches 4 storytelling events this year. And they're starting with Belonging, a Pride special on June 18th at 8 p.m. at the Secret Society. You can find out more at InvisibleSpectrumStories.com or StageAndStudio.org, where I have all that info, as well as KBOO.FM/StageAndStudio. Now, Alina, this year your theme is identity, and you're first kicking off the first storytelling event this year during Pride Month. And I'm just wondering about the intersection of people of color and LGBTQI identity as a subject that's close to your heart. Would you describe what it means to you, especially as someone who grew up in another country?
Yeah. So in Singapore, where I grew up in, we have certain laws in place that actually makes it very difficult to be gay, to be trans in my country. And there is actually a law, Section 377A, which every year we try to repeal, that that basically makes it illegal between two men to have sex. And it's so stressful because it's only, like, flippantly used. It's flippantly, like, pulled out against people. So we also have no, like, Pride Parade. We have this thing called Pink Dot, which we also get a lot of pushback on. Every year while we do this parade, and it's a peaceful gathering, it's not even a protest, it's just a gathering, it grows bigger every year, and it's so impressive to be able to see that happen. But we still have a lot of pushback groups. There are some groups that actually, like, want us gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There is the People Against Pink Dot, where they will, while we wear all pink, they wear all white.
So I wonder about what it's like for you to, you know, to translate some of that into what you're doing now with Pride Month and the stories that you're doing regarding Belonging, a Pride special for Invisible Spectrum. So how it must mean a lot to you to be able to speak freely about this, whereas in Singapore, obviously, that is not possible.
Yeah, it's a very emotional month for me. I get very teary-eyed because not only because it's such a special, important month for the LGBTQ community, but also because I have so much family and friends back home who absolutely, like, can't do this. Like, a lot of them can't be out. A lot of them are in their 50s or 60s and they still can't be out. They can't be out. So I feel very, very privileged to be in a place that can be out. And so I want to make sure that people who have their stories can actually share them. And also, even the people who are out face so much, so much struggle, especially, like, our trans friends. Like, there is still so much, like, there's still so much negativity towards them, and it's incredibly unfair. There's so much misunderstanding, and, like, people just don't understand what trans people go through, and there's so much judgment around there. So I figure that if there are more stories that can be told, there could be more understanding and empathy between that.
So will you be able to tell these stories at the Invisible Spectrum Stories event on Monday?
Yeah, we actually have two trans storytellers, like, telling their stories on stage. So I'm actually really excited to have them there. I think one of them has told stories before. I think the other one has not actually told stories on stage.
So there's a combination of more experienced storytellers as well as emerging storytellers?
Definitely.
And where are you finding people, you know, to be able to tell these stories?
I'm, like, seeking them out.
Yeah.
I feel like that is also a big thing about general like diversity inclusion in Portland, like you have to actively do the work of like finding
recruitment.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. If you just like rest and say, oh, I'm just going to put a signboard outside my door and I'm expect like, you
or
know,
just put a message on Facebook and hope people will answer. Right.
And then shrug your shoulder and say, I've done my part. I'm like,
yeah,
no,
they
you
didn't
haven't
respond. Yeah. That happens in theater a lot too.
I'm sure.
We held these auditions,
but
and
nobody
we said,
showed up.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm thinking like, okay, like I've been here in this country for 4 years and I have actively like tried to seek people out, and I can tell you that you can do that and it does take effort. But if I have been in here less longer than you have and I've seen more success than you, it might be maybe strategy and about going about doing that.
Yeah, because you, this is a life mission for you. It isn't just, you know, I'm just going to, you know, do this little thing here. But this is really your life mission right now.
Yeah.
To do Invisible Spectrum Stories.
Yeah. Actually, one of the clients that that I was reading up on their inclusion program is Google, because they're one, like I have actually a job as an advertising company. And so one of our clients is Google, and they talk about how, I can't remember what was the quote, but in essence, it was very much like, if you do not actively seek to include people, you are automatically excluding people. So it is an active attempt to try to do so.
Well, I want to make sure that we have time for you to tell a story. Do you want to tell a short story for us?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Do you want to give us a lead-in into what it is?
Yeah, it's a story about my grandmother, my papa. So she is my favorite person. She has shaped a lot of like my reality and my identity. And yeah, this story is about her.
All right. Well, this is Alina Lim of Invisible Spectrum Stories is going to tell us a story right now.
Okay. So my papa is my grandmother, and she is my favorite person in the world. When I was growing up, I always saw her as this like big billowy figure in my life. I was very, very small, and in comparison, she was huge. First of all, she was much taller than me, and she had these like large, like heaving breasts over this giant heaving belly. And she was for me, this force of nature. She had these tight black curls, like close to her scalp. And these fantastic, like scrawled on black eyebrows using an eyeliner, not even eyebrow pens, just scrawled across her eyebrows, and she was very she was a woman filled with very strange wisdoms. She would like say things like, you know, don't enter an elevator if there's a man in it, including a male cat. Like, she was very specific about the way she wanted to operate her life, and she absolutely loved me, and I absolutely loved her. But then she got very sick. I mean, she's very old. She's like she's in her 80s, but the quickness of the decline was very shocking to me. First of all, she started to forget things, and then her body started shrinking. So from her, this huge, like, woman who, like, in my mind took up all this room and this space, wherever she went, she, like, shrank so much that I would see, like her like, arm bones or just, like, had, like, very thin, dry skin just hanging off them, and her face was gone, and she was just such a different woman. She also stopped dyeing her hair. She stopped painting her nails. But her hands were always the same. Her hands, she had these like fantastic, gnarly, bony hands with like swollen arthritic knuckles. And it was my favorite part of her body, because it told me that these were hands that lived a life worth living. So her hands were the same, but they'd gotten colder, which is something that wasn't her. She was always warm. And she was like fading, and she would forget. So I would talk to her, and she wouldn't remember me all the time. So when I go back to Singapore this year, I speak to her again, and she has completely forgotten, or she's like spacing out, and that's fine. And I bring dantat to her, which is an egg custard dessert, which you can get in dim sum places. And I sit with her, and I scoop a little bit, and I feed her, and I say, "Hey, papa, dantat ho hyung a." Which means, isn't this like, you know, custard fragrant? And then she says, Hohyong. And we'd go back and forth and we'd say this, and then I would repeat the series of things and I would remind her, hey, it's Kevin's wedding soon in a few days. It was his wedding. You know, let's go together. And she's like, okay, okay. And then she would like, and everything would come back and she would like remember, and then she would like, and she was like there and she was present. I did this every day for like 5 days. Papa, Hohyong. And she would tell me, Hohyong. Papa, we're going to go to the wedding together, okay? Kevin's getting married. And she's like, oh, he's getting married. Yes, he's getting married. And we repeat again and again and again. Hohyong, Hyong, Hohyong, Hyong. And finally, we go to the wedding day itself. And she shows up. She's, you know, she hangs out. She seems pretty happy. And for like 3 hours, she's totally there as he's like getting married to her, as they're signing papers, as they're like saying their vows. And it's amazing. And she's just so present. And then the dinner starts, and then she starts to fade, and then she like wants to go home, which is this line that she'll always say, I want to go home, I want to go home. It doesn't matter if she's home, she just wants to go home. And eventually we take her back. But it is so wonderful to be able to know that she, that being present for her grandson's wedding was so important. And she was.
Oh, that was lovely. Thank you. Thank you for telling that. Invisible Spectrum Stories launches 4 storytelling events this year with POC storytellers. The first one is titled Belonging, a Pride Special, and it's next Monday, June 18th at 8 p.m. at the Secret Society in Portland. Doors open at 7 and the show is at 8 p.m. Secret Society is located at 116 Northeast Russell Street in Portland. More info about Secret Society at secretsociety.net. You can also purchase tickets at ticketfly.com and find out more at invisiblespectrumstories.com or stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Future events are August 20th, October 22nd, and December 17th. And if you'd like to tell a story at their next event, how do you pitch it, Alina?
Oh, you can go to invisiblespectrumstories.com and we have a pitch
page.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can absolutely pitch your stories. I haven't actually locked down a theme yet for those. So feel free to, you know, chime in and then I can like maybe even try to shape the theme around your story.
Wow. Well, what an incredible offer there. So in the last minute remaining, would you tell us how important it is for people of color to be more visible as storytellers, especially in Portland?
I feel that there are just such incredible stories that people have here that there are so many basically white audience who has no access to them because, well, first of all, they don't seek it out, and too, they don't know how to seek it out. But like, I think the stories are important not only for like people to empathize with each other, but also because there is such power in being able to being quiet and witnessing somebody's truth. And I think it's very healing for both the storyteller to be able to do that and own that time to say, like, this is who I am. This is my reality. Shut up and listen to me. And that's powerful by itself. And also it's great for the audience so that not only can they empathize and they can connect. More often than not, you find that there is way more connective tissue between the storyteller and the audience than what we initially thought about. So this is important. If you haven't come for one of these events, I highly recommend it. It is pretty life-altering. People have come up to me many times after that to tell me. So on both sides, the storyteller and the audience.
It must be a powerful experience, you know, to witness that as well as to be part of it. So
it's a lot.
Kudos to you for doing this. I know it's a labor of love for you, you know, and this is not necessarily your day job, obviously, but, you know, that you have empowered people, empowered yourself to tell POC stories in Portland. And so congratulations on that, Alina.
Thanks. I feel like everyone else does all the work, so I'm just happy to be there for the ride.
It's all a collaboration, isn't it? Alina Lim, Invisible Spectrum Stories. It's so good to have you on Stage and Studio. Thank you for coming down to KBOO.
Thank you for having me.
I'm DeMay Roberts, Stage and Studio. Next up, a piece I produced with Michael Johnson of San Francisco about the Angel Island Immigration Station. Little background. Most Americans recognize Ellis Island as a place where more than 20 million immigrants were welcomed to this country, mostly European immigrants, from 1892 through 1924. But in San Francisco Bay, thousands of immigrants faced detention for weeks and months at the Angel Island Immigration Station. From 1910 through 1940, Asian immigrants were locked up in stark barracks for up to 6 years. They endured lengthy and daily interrogations by officials, and a good many were deported depending on their answers. Angel Island and the exclusionary law specifically for Asians are reminders that American immigration laws have and still are fueled by racism. Here is a piece on Angel Island, originally aired as part of my Peabody Award-winning series Crossing East. The fog bell clangs, and a group of 50 children exit down a ramp from a ferry to the Angel Island Immigration Station in San Francisco Bay. For 30 years, Angel Island was the entry point for close to 175,000 Chinese immigrants. Now it's a national park where tourists and students can explore a dark time in American history.
The gate up here used to lead to a covered walkway, and it would go directly to the mess hall.
Erica G., education director of Angel Island, wends her way through a maze of barbed wire fences leading to a series of yellow wooden barracks.
And essentially with the covered walkway is that once immigrants went inside the administration building, they pretty much didn't go outside again. And so most of the time they really were inside, and they didn't really have free access outside.
Immigrants from throughout the Pacific passed through Angel Island, but it was the Chinese who were detained for anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 years. Families were split up and underwent medical examinations. Then they were housed in separate quarters.
Women were held in this room probably in the first 2 to 3 years of the operations of the immigration station.
We pass through a dark hallway and enter a gray room with no curtains. G points to rows of metal bunk beds stacked three on top of each other.
You know, these people were living in very close living quarters. Women and men were separated. Women traveling with children would also have their children with them. If boys were traveling with their mom and they were about 12, 13, or 14, boys would actually be housed with the men. So for kids, this is a really scary thing. Imagine, you know, traveling and suddenly being separated. You had to go with all these men now.
G says that health code inspectors set a maximum number of 60 people to be housed in this room, but she says they always exceeded that. Everything in the room is a shade of gray, even the walls and floors. It's hard not to think of it as a dorm room in a jailhouse. The men's quarters, located in a separate building, are bigger. More men immigrated. The people housed in these barracks never knew how long they would be detained or if they were going to be deported.
So the men who were housed here would pretty much be in here all day. They would go downstairs to that mess hall, down the covered walkway, and they would go for breakfast, they would go for lunch, and then they would go maybe for a snack in the afternoon, and then a dinner. You ate your meals, you might have a time outside, but the majority of it was spent in confined into one room with lots and lots of other people.
The only other activities were the daily interrogations. Through a translator, Chinese men, women, and children were taken to a small room with a wooden desk and two chairs. They faced questioning about their lives back home and their relatives or friends in America. The interrogators were looking for any discrepancies in their stories so they could be used as reasons for deportation. Dale Ching was 16 when he arrived at Angel Island, and he remembers the fear and paranoia the interrogations brought.
Well, I was there for that many months, and I was waiting for the interrogation. When after interrogation, then we can more or less freely talk about things. Because after interrogation, we still worry about it, because some stranger might be a spy talking about the official. But you have to know who's who to talk to.
Ching now works as a docent for Angel Island, and on his tours, he talks about the lack of personal privacy.
You're going in to take a shower? No curtain. You're going into the toilet, you sit there and you come out like that. No partition in between. The sleeping quarter, 10 o'clock, the light will go out every day. The light go out. No matter what you do, you got to go to bed. But the bathroom, yes, the light is on all the time, but you're kind of scary to go.
Ching was not alone in his reaction to the detention. Chinese detainees carved their responses all over the walls of the men's barracks.
So the poem reads, "Detained in the wooden house for several tens of days, it is all because of the Mexican exclusion law which implicates me. It is a pity heroes have no way of exercising their prowess."
Erica G. points out poetry written in Chinese characters now barely visible on the walls.
And then the second poem reads, "From now on, I'm departing from this building. All of my fellow villagers are rejoicing with me. Don't say that everything within is a Western style. Even if it's built of jade, it is turned into a cage."
A great deal of care went into creating this poetry. First, one man wrote it, then another carved the characters skillfully onto the barrack walls.
People were very aware at Angel Island that they were being discriminated against because they were Chinese and that they were unable to do anything about the situation.
Judy Young is the co-author of Island, Poetry and History of Chinese Immigrants on Angel Island. Along with Mark Him Lai and Jenny Lim, they documented the poetry and oral history of detainees.
All the poems in this collection we know were written by men because the poems by the women were in a building that was destroyed in the fire in 1940, so we have no records of poems by women. Many of the poems, I think, reflect a sense of sadness, depression, loneliness, because these are immigrants that were being detained for weeks and months at a time, and they were just feeling very frustrated and depressed and yearning to be freed or returned home.
Random thoughts deep at night. Some ye ngao gam, ye jing mei men.
In the quiet of night, I heard faintly the whistling of wind. The forms and shadows saddened me. Upon seeing the landscape, I composed a poem. The floating clouds, the fog, darken the sky. The moon shines faintly as the insects chirp. Grief and bitterness entwined are heaven sent. The sad person sits alone, leaning by a window.
Bei fu xiang lin, tin xiang hin, sao yan, dok chao, yi chang bin.
The poetry conjures up images of male detainees carving onto walls as they lay in their bunk beds in overcrowded barracks. Some of the poetry, like "The Weak Shall Conquer," talks about revenge for mistreatment.
Lao bu chui kim do mei zhao, shu ji do qi lei xiang lao. Tong yue de ji xing gong ye, ding chan chou yan, chou bu lao.
Leaving behind my writing brush and removing my sword, I came to America. Who is to know two streams of tears would flow upon arriving here? If there comes a day when I shall have retained my ambition and become successful, I will certainly behead the barbarians and spare not a single blade of grass.
Judy Young considers the poetry an act of resistance and protest.
They are ways that the Chinese could vent their frustrations, express their anger, express how they feel that they've been wronged, and how they hope someday to seek revenge and to right the wrong. I think that it's one of the few evidences that we have of the early Chinese immigrants and what they thought about the Chinese Exclusion Act and the way that they were incarcerated at Angel Island Immigration Station. If you read some of the poems, it also says this is a record of what happened to us. It's also a way for us to tell those who will be following us what to expect and to console them and to encourage and support them. Especially if they bothered to carve them into the walls and not just penned or penciled them in. They must have thought about how this would be read by others. And I wonder if it isn't also a record of resistance for future generations.
That's what keeps Dale Ching giving tours to school children at Angel Island. He, like other former detainees, find it hard to even come back to face the fences that once locked them in.
Everybody, they mention Angel Island, they don't want to talk about it. I can see why they don't want to talk about it. At least I know I'm doing something. History is history.
And that was a story about the Angel Island Immigration Station produced by me and as well as Michael Johnson. And for more info about Angel Island, visit AIISF.org or crossingeast.org, where you can find out more about the Crossing East series, where it came from. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Ray Bodwell. I'll have the show online at stageandstudio.org and kboo.fm/stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts, and we're going out with music by Shasta Tycho.